Here at this mid-December time of the year, yes, we too will be celebrating the Christmas season. Though it's still officially just the Advent season. It's Christmas only in the world of shopping and television shows. Well, and radio shows too. I keep so far out of the world myself that I've been very little aware of the Christmas pizzazz this year. But I understand that the pizzazz is going on as usual. But don't worry, this won't be just any Christmas show. We'll attend this evening, under lamplight, to the theme of Christmas out of the dark. And so we invite you to attend with us on Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge, with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson, coming to you from Roundabout Studios in Cambridge with Axel right here with me. Stand by for a kind of punk Father Christmas, some Christmas blues, some Welsh voices, both Richard Burton and Dylan Thomas, perhaps one traditional Christmas carol, and a few other pieces to lead us into the depths and joys, darkness and light of the season. We want to attend this week to the mythic overtones of this season, the darkest time of the year, but traditionally the time to celebrate the coming of light, the continuing of the cycle. If it's darkest now, that only means that it will be light very soon. We look for the spark of light appearing to us in the deep darkness, not just the darkness inside, but the darkness of our hearts and souls also. We celebrate this hope, though perhaps we can hardly believe it to be true. A therapist friend of mine recently remarked casually about depression and low spirits that there's a lot of it going around, a kind of epidemic. You may be suffering too. It's appropriate for this time of year. But so is this communal celebration, reminding us that there are larger things than our own heavy hearts. So just by acknowledging this community of heavy hearts and joining in the vigil for the coming of light, our hearts may be lightened in many senses. So let's start with a very hopeful song. It's been going through my head lately, and I thought I'd bring it along to run through your head too. It comes to us from those heady but dark days of the Vietnam War and the idealism that dared to hope that our good hearts can make a difference and bring light to the horrors. "War is over if you want it," was a slogan, John Lennon was always a brilliant sloganeer, that appeared on billboards in various cities over the names John Lennon and Yoko Ono. That's the way to use your riches. And here now is the musical version of these billboards. "So this is Christmas," John begins, "and what have you done?" That's a great question, coming to us from 40 years ago and still fresh. What he means, of course, is what light have we been able to shine in the midst of whatever darkness is around us? Another year over, a new one just begun. The song just goes on and on, as slogans do, droning the message to us. If we're not open to the message, we'll never get it. And one more thought before the song. Last week, on December 8th, we celebrated the 30th anniversary of John's death in 1980. Still an unbelievable moment for so many of us.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas,
That was Happy Christmas, War is Over, with John Lennon, Yoko Ono, and the Harlem Community Choir. There are plenty of wars we can shine our light upon, the big ones and the small ones right in our immediate lives. Time now for our punk song, from the Kinks, from 1977, Father Christmas. We hear the familiar Ray Davis misfit speaker, who, when he was young, was an innocent, or at least polite, kid. When I was small, I believed in Santa Claus, though I knew he was my dad. That's good. The double vision that can hold on to the paradox. Santa exists, Santa is just my dad. And he opens his presents, and he's glad. Simple, idyllic. But the kids now, they knock Father Christmas's reindeer to the floor and they mug Father Christmas himself. They don't want presents, they just want money. That's the way things were in the late 70s, and I'll leave you to decide whether they're like that now, too. We want your bread, so don't make any noise. Give all the toys to the little rich boys. The class war, at least, is not over. The kids see through the commercial crap of Christmas toys. Don't give my brother a Steve Austin outfit. Steve Austin, bionic man. A big deal then. Don't give my sister a cuddly toy. Don't want a jigsaw or Monopoly money. We only want the real McCoy. And then the kink in the song. But give my daddy a job 'cause he needs one. He's got a lot of mouths to feed. This mugging takes place in a much larger context. And at least these kids, rough and punky as they are, at least they understand the economics of the situation. They understand where the real need is. And then the casual line, almost thrown away, but if you've got one, I'll have a machine gun so I can scare all the kids on the street. It's like he's asking for some sweeties at the sweet shop. So polite all of a sudden. If you've got one, I'll have a machine gun. But like Lennon's song, this song asks us to shed Christmas light a little farther. If only by remembering the kids who got nothing while we're drinking down our wine. It reminds me of John Ruskin's line that the rich man cannot sit down at his feast unless he sits down blindfolded. This song asks us to take off the blindfold, under threat of a mugging, of course. And then suddenly the shift back to the sweet jingling bells. It begins nice and gentle, sweet Christmas bells. And then is interrupted by Dave's heavy guitar and Mick Avery's manic drumsticks. Boy.
time. But remember the kids who got nothing while you're drinking down your wine. For your silly toys. Father Christmas, please hand it over. We'll beat you up, so don't make it some noise.
Maybe you remember that you heard the Kinks' Father Christmas before on Evening Under Lamplight on the Christmas show 2 years ago. But since we've now passed our 50th show, I'm allowing myself to repeat a song now and again. After all, as the joke says, who's counting? So that Father Christmas is standing there outside a department store. And all the people are walking past, shopping, planning, twinkling with perhaps even just a little bit of light in the dark late afternoon. But here's someone who's out amid the shoppers, but with a heaviness upon him he can't get rid of. The song's called The Christmas Blues, from last year's amazing Bob Dylan album Christmas in the Heart. What led him to bring us this sentimental, self-pitying song? Surely just the fun of playing around with the blues and daring us to make rude comments about his voice as he sings. But rough as it is, attend carefully and you'll feel the sweetness in the voice too. The light in the darkness, we might say.
The jingle bells are jingling, the streets are white with snow. Clouds are mingling, but there's no one that I know. I'm sure that you'll forgive me if I don't enthuse. I guess I got the Christmas blues. I've done my window shopping, there's not a store I missed. But what's the use of stopping when there's no somebody wants you, somebody needs you. Christmas is a joy of joys. But friends, when you're lonely, you'll find that it's only a thing for little girls and little boys. May all your days be merry, they'll see full of cheer. But till it's January, I'll just go and disappear. Oh, Santa may have bought you some stars for your shoes, but Santa only brought me the blues. Those brightly packaged tinsel covers, some stars for your shoes, but Santa only bought me the blues. Those brightly packaged tinsel covered Christmas blues.
Oh, Santa may have brought you some stars for your shoes, but Santa only brought me the blues, those brightly packaged tinsel-covered blues. Well, there are some lines that make the song worth redoing. Bob Dylan bringing us the old Dean Martin song, The Christmas Blues. But now here's a story about a kid who really does get a variety of presents, some useful, some not. But what he was given more than that is a storehouse of wonderful memories of Christmas. Dylan Thomas reaches into the darkness of his memories to bring to light these wonderful details from his child's Christmas in Wales. You may know this piece, and you may know Dylan Thomas's telling of it, in which case, you'll surely be glad to hear it again. If you've never heard this, attend closely. You're in for a big treat. The reading takes almost 20 minutes.
One Christmas was so much like the other in those years around the Seatown corner now, out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases roll down towards the two-tongued sea like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street. And they stop at the rim of the ice-edged, fish-freezing waves, and I plunge my hands in the snow and bring out whatever I can find. In goes my hand into that wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea. And out come Mrs. Prothero and the firemen. It was on the afternoon of the day of Christmas Eve, and I was in Mrs. Prothero's garden, waiting for cats with her son Jim. It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December, in my memory, as white as Lapland, although there were no reindeers. But there were cats. Patient, cold, and callous, our hands wrapped in socks, we waited to snowball the cats. Sleek and long as jaguars and horrible whiskered, spitting and snarling, they would slide and sidle over the white back garden walls, and the lynx-eyed hunters, Jim and I, fur-capped and moccasined trappers from Hudson Bay off Mumbles Road, would hurl our deadly snowballs at the green of their eyes. The wise cats never appeared. We were so still, Eskimo-footed Arctic marksmen in the muffling silence of the eternal snows, eternal ever since Wednesday, that we never heard Mrs. Prothero's first cry from her igloo at the bottom of the garden. Or if we heard it at all, it was to us like the far-off challenge of our enemy and prey, the neighbor's polar cat. But soon the voice grew louder. "Fire!" cried Mrs. Prothero. And she beat the dinner gong. And we ran down the garden with the snowballs in our arms towards the house, and smoke indeed was pouring out of the dining room, and the gong was bombolating, and Mrs. Prothero was announcing ruin like a town crier in Pompeii. This was better than all the cats in Wales standing on the wall in a row. We bounded into the house laden with snowballs and stopped at the open door of the smoke-filled room. Something was burning, all right. Perhaps it was Mr. Prothero, who always slept there after midday dinner with a newspaper over his face. But he was standing in the middle of the room saying, "A fine Christmas," and smacking at the smoke with a slipper. "Call the fire brigade," cried Mrs. Prothero as she beat the gong. "They won't be here," said Mr. Prothero. "It's Christmas." There was no fire to be seen, only clouds of smoke, and Mr. Prothero standing in the middle of them, waving his slipper as though he were conducting. "Do something," he said. And we threw all our snowballs into the smoke. I think we missed Mr. Prothero, and ran out of the house to the telephone box. "Let's call the police as well," Jim said, "and the ambulance. And Ernie Jenkins, he likes fires." But we only called the fire brigade. And soon the fire engine came, and three tall men in helmets brought a hose into the house, and Mr. Prothero got out just in time before they turned it on. Nobody could have had a noisier Christmas Eve. And when the fireman turned off the hose and was standing in the wet, smoky room, Jim's aunt, Miss Prothero, came downstairs and peered in at them. Jim and I waited very quietly to hear what she would say to them. She said the right thing, always. She looked at the three tall firemen in their shining helmets, standing among the smoke and cinders and dissolving snowballs, and she said, "Would you like anything to read?" Years and years ago, when I was a boy, when there were wolves in Wales, and birds the colour of red flannel petticoats whisked past the harp-shaped hills, when we sang and wallowed all night and day in caves that smelt like Sunday afternoons, in damp front farmhouse parlours, and we chased with the jawbones of deacons the English and the bears. Before the motor car, before the wheel, before the Duchess-faced horse, when we rode the daft and happy hills bareback, it snowed and it snowed. But here a small boy says, "It snowed last year too. I made a snowman and my brother knocked it down, and I knocked my brother down, and then we had tea." But that was not the same snow, I say. Our snow was not only shaken from whitewashed buckets down the sky. It came shawling out of the ground and swam and drifted out of the arms and hands and bodies of the trees. Snow grew overnight on the roofs of the houses like a pure and grandfather moss, minutely ivied the walls and settled on the postman opening the gate like a dumb, numb thunderstorm of white, torn Christmas cards. Were there postmen then, too? With sprinkling eyes and wind-cherried noses on spread, frozen feet, they crunched up to the doors and mittened on them manfully. But all that the children could hear was a ringing of bells. You mean that the postman went rat-a-tat-tat and the doors rang? I mean that the bells that the children could hear were inside them. I only hear thunder sometimes, never bells. There were church bells, too. Inside them? No, 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 in the bat-black, snow-white belfries tugged by bishops and storks. And they rang their tidings over the bandaged town, over the frozen foam of the powder and ice cream hills, over the crackling sea. It seemed that all the churches boomed for joy under my window, and the weathercocks crew for Christmas on our fence. Get back to the postman. They were just ordinary postmen, fond of walking and dogs and Christmas and the snow. They knocked on the doors with blue knuckles. Ours has got a black knocker. And then they stood on the white welcome mat in the little drifted porches and huffed and puffed, making ghosts with their breath, and jogged from foot to foot like small boys wanting to go out. And then the presents. And then the presents after the Christmas box. And the cold postman with a rose on his button nose tingled down the tea-tray slithered run of the chilly, glinting hill. He went in his ice-boned boots like a man on fishmonger's slabs. He wagged his bag like a frozen camel's hump, dizzily turned the corner on one foot, and by God, he was gone. Get back to the presents. There were the useful presents, engulfing mufflers of the old coach days and mittens made for giant sloths, zebra scarves of a substance like silky gum that could be tug-of-war down to the galoshes, blinding tam-o'-shanters like patchwork tea cozies and bunny-suited busbies and balaclavas for victims of head-shrinking tribes. From aunts who always wore wool next to the skin, there were moustached and rasping vests that made you wonder why the aunts had any skin left at all. And once I had a little crocheted nose bag from an aunt now, alas, no longer whinnying with us. And pictureless books in which small boys, though warned with quotations not to, would skate on Farmer Giles's pond and did and drowned. And books that told me everything about the wasp, except why. Go on to the useless presents. Bags of moist and many-colored jelly babies, and a folded flag and a false nose and a tram conductor's cap and a machine that punched tickets and rang a bell. Never a catapult. Once, by a mistake that no one could explain, a little hatchet. And a celluloid duck that made, when you pressed it, a most unduck-like sound. A mewing moo that an ambitious cat might make who wished to be a cow. And a painting book in which I could make the grass, the trees, the sea, and the animals any color I please. And still the dazzling sky-blue sheep are grazing in the red field under the rainbow billed and pea-green birds. Hard-boiled, toffee, fudge, and all sorts, crunches, cracknel, humbugs, glaciers, marzipan, and butter Welsh for the Welsh. And troops of bright tin soldiers who, if they could not fight, could always run. And snakes and families and happy ladders and easy hobby games for little engineers, complete with instructions. Oh, easy for Leonardo. And a whistle to make the dogs bark, to wake up the old man next door, to make him beat on the wall with his stick, to shake our picture off the wall. And a packet of cigarettes. You put one in your mouth and you stood at the corner of the street and you waited for hours in vain for an old lady to scold you for smoking a cigarette, and then with a smirk you ate it. And then it was breakfast under the balloons. Were there uncles like in our house? There are always uncles at Christmas, the same uncles. And on Christmas mornings, with dog-disturbing whistle and sugar fags, I would scour the swathed town for the news of the little world and find always a dead bird by the post office or the white, deserted swings. Perhaps a robin, all but one of his fires out. Men and women wading, scooping back from chapel with taproom noses and wind-busked cheeks, all albinos, huddled their stiff black jarring feathers against the irreligious snow. Mistletoe hung from the gas brackets in all the front parlors. There was sherry and walnuts and bottled beer and crackers by the dessert spoons. And cats in their furabouts watched the fires. And the high-heaped fires spat, all ready for the chestnuts and the mulling pokers. Some few large men sat in the front parlors without their collars, uncles almost certainly, trying their new cigars, holding them out judiciously at arm's length, returning them to their mouths, coughing, then holding them out again as though waiting for the explosion. And some few small aunts, not wanted in the kitchen, nor anywhere else for that matter, sat on the very edges of their chairs, poised and brittle, afraid to break like faded cups and saucers. Not many those mornings trod the piling streets. An old man, always fawn-bowlered, yellow-gloved, and at this time of year with spats of snow, would take his constitutional to the white bowling green and back as he would take it wet or fire or on Christmas Day or Doomsday. Sometimes two hale young men with big pipes blazing, no overcoats and wind-blown scarves, would trudge unspeaking down to the forlorn sea to work up an appetite to blow away the fumes, who knows, to walk into the waves until nothing of them was left but the two curling smoke clouds of their inextinguishable briars. Then I would be slap-dashing home, the gravy smell of the dinners of others, the bird smell, the brandy, the pudding and mince coiling up to my nostrils, when out of a snow-clogged side lane would come a boy, the spit of myself, with a pink-tipped cigarette and the violet past of a black eye, cocky as a bullfinch, leering all to himself. I hated him on sight and sound, and would be about to put my dog whistle to my lips and blow him off the face of Christmas, when suddenly he, with a violet wink, put his whistle to his lips and blew so stridently, so high, so exquisitely loud, that gobbling faces, their cheek bulged with goose, would press against their tinseled windows the whole length of the white echoing street. For dinner we had turkey and blazing pudding, and after dinner the uncles sat in front of the fire, loosened all buttons, put their large, moist hands over their watch chains, groaned a little, and slept. Mothers, aunts, and sisters scuttled to and fro bearing tureens. Aunt Bessie, who had already been frightened twice by a clockwork mouse, whimpered at the sideboard and had some elderberry wine. The dog was sick. Auntie Dursey had to have 3 aspirins, but Auntie Hannah, who liked port, stood in the middle of the snowbound backyard, singing like a big-bosomed thrush. I would blow up balloons to see how big they would blow up to, and then when they burst, which they all did, the uncles jumped and rumbled. In the rich and heavy afternoon, the uncles breathing like dolphins and the snow descending, I would sit among festoons and Chinese lanterns and nibble dates and try to make a model man-o-war, following the instructions for little engineers, and produce what might be mistaken for a sea-going tramcar. Or I would go out, my bright new boots squeaking into the white world onto the seaward hill, to call on Jim and Dan and Jack, and to pad through the still streets, leaving huge, deep footprints on the hidden pavements. I bet people will think they've been hippos. What did you do if you saw a hippo coming down our street? I'd go like this, bang! I'd throw him over the railings and roll him down the hill, and then I'd tickle him under the ear and he'd wag his tail. What would you do if you saw 2 hippos? Iron-flanked and bellowing he-hippos clanked and battered through the scudding snow towards us as we passed Mr. Daniel's house. Let's post Mr. Daniel a snowball through his letterbox. Let's write things in the snow. Let's write, Mr. Daniel looks like a spaniel all over his lawn. Or we walked on the white shore. Can the fishes see it snowing? The silent, one-clouded heavens drifted onto the sea. Now we were snow-blind travelers lost on the North Hills, and vast, dew-lapped dogs with flasks round their necks ambled and shambled up to us, baying Excelsior. We returned home through the poor streets, where only a few children fumbled with bare red fingers in the wheel-rutted snow, and cat called after us, their voices fading away as we trudged uphill into the cries of the dock birds and the hooting of ships out in the whirling bay. And then at tea, the recovered uncles would be jolly, and the ice cake loomed in the center of the table like a marble grave. Auntie Hannah laced her tea with rum because it was only once a year. Bring out the tall tales now that we told by the fire as the gaslight bubbled like a diver. Ghosts wooed like owls in the long nights when I dared not look over my shoulder. Animals lurked in the cubbyhole under the stairs where the gas meter ticked. And I remember that we went singing carols once when there wasn't the shaving of a moon to light the flying streets. At the end of a long road was a drive that led to a large house. And we stumbled up the darkness of the drive that night, each one of us afraid, each one holding a stone in his hand, in case, and all of us too brave to say a word. The wind through the trees made noises as of old and unpleasant and maybe web-footed men wheezing in caves. We reached the black bulk of the house. What shall we give them? Hark the herald? No, Jack said. Good King Wenceslas. I'll count 3. 1, 2, 3. And we began to sing, our voices high and seemingly distant in the snow-filtered darkness round the house that was occupied by nobody we knew. We stood close together near the dark door. Good King Wenceslas last looked out on the feast of Stephen. And then a small, dry voice, like the voice of someone who has not spoken for a long time, joined our singing. A small, dry eggshell voice from the other side of the door. A small, dry voice through the keyhole. And when we stopped running, we were outside our house. The front room was lovely. Balloons floated under the hot water bottle gulping gas. Everything was good again and shone over the town. Perhaps it was a ghost, Jim said. Perhaps it was trolls, Dan said, who was always reading. Let's go in and see if there's any jelly left, Jack said. And we did that. Always on Christmas night there was music. An uncle played the fiddle, a cousin sang Cherry Ripe, and another uncle sang Drake's Drum. It was very warm in the little house. Auntie Hannah, who had got onto the parsnip wine, sang a song about bleeding hearts and death, and then another in which she said her heart was like a bird's nest. And then everybody laughed again, and then I went to bed. Looking through my bedroom window, out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising from them up the long, steadily falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept.
That was, of course, Silent Night, sung by the Cambridge Singers in an arrangement by John Rutter, following Dylan Thomas reciting for us his child's Christmas in Wales. And you're listening to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. And I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, inviting you to attend to Christmas out of the dark. And next, I would like to bring in a poem about winter darkness, John Donne's Nocturnal upon St. Lucy's Day being the shortest day. St. Lucy's Day took place on December 12th, which was the day of the winter solstice in the old Julian calendar. We're not sure what the occasion of the poem is, but it's likely it was written after the death of Donne's beloved wife, Anne. The main theme of the poem is that just as the day has now reached its midnight, and the year has shrunk down to its own midnight, or time of greatest darkness, so he has become as nothing. Like many of Donne's poems, however, this is a collection of witty, erudite, and esoteric images which make it almost impossible to comprehend, especially when listening to the poem read aloud. And if I were to sit here and go through the poem for you, section by section, I would, I'm afraid, kill the poem. But there's something else we can do. Let me invite you just to listen to the poem, as it will be read for us by Richard Burton, who gives here one of his best performances, his voice so deadened, yet dancing through each line. Just attend, then, to the sound of this reading, picking up whatever words and images come to you.
'Tis the year's midnight, and it is the day's. Lucy's, who scarce 7 hours herself unmasks. The sun is spent, and now his flasks send forth light squibs, no constant rays. The world's whole sap is sunk. The general balm the hydroptic earth hath drunk, whither, as to the bed's feet, life is shrunk, dead and interred. Yet all these seem to laugh compared with me, who am their epitaph. Study me, then, you who shall lovers be at the next world, that is, at the next spring. For I am every dead thing in whom love wrought new alchemy. For his art did express a quintessence even from nothingness. From dull privations and lean emptiness, he ruined me, and I am rebegot of absence, darkness, death, things which are not. All others from all things draw all that's good, life, soul, form, spirit, whence they being have. I, by love's limbeck, am the grave of all that's nothing. Oft a flood have we two wept, and so drowned the whole world, us two. Oft did we grow to be two chaoses, when we did show care to aught else, and often absences withdrew our souls and made us carcasses. But I am by her death, which word wrongs her, of the first nothing the elixir grown. Were I a man, that I were one, I needs must know. I should prefer, if I were any beast, some ends, some means. Yea, plants, yea, stones detest and love. All some properties invest. If I an ordinary nothing were, a shadow, a light and body must be here. But I am none, nor will my sun renew. You lovers, for whose sake the lesser sun at this time to the goat is run to fetch new lust and give it you, enjoy your summer all. Since she enjoys her long night's festival, let me prepare towards her, and let me call this hour her vigil and her eve, since this, both the years and the day's deep midnight is.
Thank you.
That was the Anonymous Four chanting Taverner's Medie Noctus Tempus Est, The Time is the Middle of the Night, from the album, appropriately for us, called Darkness into Light. And let us end this evening under lamplight with some Christmas thoughts by Robert Louis Stevenson, from an essay called A Christmas Sermon. It was the final essay in a series of 12 monthly essays he wrote for an American magazine in 1887 to 88. And here he offers his final, kind words to an audience perhaps too quick to judge their neighbors and too quick to judge themselves as inadequate because they did not always succeed. Success being so often the American confirmation of virtuousness. In other words, these people are in the darkness at Christmas time, but do not know how to deal with this darkness. We may indeed be acutely aware of all the areas of life in which we have not come up to the mark, but we should not wallow in dark sorrow. We should remember to be joyful, at least for the sake of others. And luckily, the pressures of the Christmas season work upon us to encourage such lightful joy. Here's what RLS says. Christmas is not only the mile mark of another year, moving us to thoughts of self-examination. It is a season, from all its associations, whether domestic or religious, suggesting thoughts of joy. A man dissatisfied with his endeavors is a man tempted to sadness. And in the midst of the winter, when his life runs lowest and he is reminded of the empty chairs of his beloved, it is well he should be condemned to this fashion of the smiling face. Noble disappointment, noble self-denial are not to be admired, not even to be pardoned, if they bring bitterness. Gentleness and cheerfulness, these come before all morality. They are the perfect duties. If your morals make you dreary, depend upon it they are wrong. I do not say give them up, for they may be all you have, but conceal them like a vice, lest they should spoil the lives of better and simpler people. There is an idea abroad among moral people that they should make their neighbours good. One person I have to make good, myself. But my duty to my neighbour is much more nearly expressed by saying that I have to make him happy, if I may. So much for Stevenson's reflections on our need, our duty rather, to lighten the lives of others, even when our lives are dark and dirtied with guilt and shame and failures. And how do we face our own failures? We don't shrug our shoulders and walk away from them, but we remember that we all fall short. Life's like that, face it. But let's face it without shame, and without letting it damage us and keep us from going on. Here's how Stevenson puts it. To look back upon the past year and see how little we have striven, and to what small purpose, and how often we have been cowardly and hung back, or temerarious and rushed unwisely in, and how every day and all day long we have transgressed the law of kindness. It may seem like a paradox, but in the bitterness of these discoveries, a certain consolation resides. Life is not designed to minister to a man's vanity. He goes upon his long business most of the time with a hanging head, and all the time like a blind child. full of rewards and pleasures as it is, so that to see the daybreak or the moon rise, or to meet a friend, or to hear the dinner call when he is hungry, fills him with surprising joys, this world is yet for him no abiding city. Friendships fail through, health fails, weariness assails him. Year after year he must thumb the hardly varying record of his own weakness and folly. It is a friendly process of detachment. When the time comes that he should go, there need be few illusions left about himself. Here lies one who meant well, tried a little, failed much. Surely that may be his epitaph, of which he need not be ashamed. Nor will he complain at the summons which calls a defeated soldier from the field. Defeated, aye, but if there is still 1 inch of fight in his old spirit, undishonored. The faith which sustained him in his lifelong blindness and lifelong disappointment will scarce even be required in this last formality of laying down his arms. Give him a march with his old bones. There, out of the glorious sun-colored earth, out of the day and the dusts of the ecstasy, there goes another faithful failure. Was a chant from the Teze community, Within Our Darkest Night. Within our darkest night, you kindle the fire that never dies away, that never dies away. And so we come to the end of this rather unorthodox Christmas show. I don't mean to make you miserable with these dark thoughts and dark music, but to offer some warm light in this cold, dark time. First, of course, we have to acknowledge the cold darkness. Then and only then can we be receptive to the warm light, or I suppose produce any true light ourselves. So now, good night from me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. You've been listening to Evening Under Lamplight on the theme of Christmas out of the dark. And so let's move on to good cheer for us and for others. Good night.